What I want to talk about is some of the work that I've been doing in my profession just at Lancashire Teaching Hospital and also in my work with NHS Improvement. In terms of who I am, I guess I've done the walk. I'm a consultant at Royal Preston Hospital, Lancashire Teaching Hospitals, but I'm also an advisor in the Getting It Right First Time at NHS Improvement. And in the past, you can see I've walked the walk. In terms of declaration of interests, I do work with loads of point-of-care devices, but I am not an advisor or a consultant or anything with any of the diagnostic companies. I've tried to be agnostic today with naming devices, but it's really difficult sometimes. So apologies if I do mention a company. I'm not endorsing it, but I've worked with more or less every diagnostic company over the last few years. I like kingdoms, sort of. I like chaos, I guess, and the organised chaos theory. And kingdoms' organised theory is that we're all trying to do the right thing, but we're not necessarily all in the same timeline. And sometimes when we're kind of pulling at each other, it's not because we don't like each other, we're just not on the same timeline. But I think there's a window of opportunity at the moment where there's a lot of things happening at the moment. It's a really exciting time to be in the NHS. And there's a window of opportunity occurring now where a lot of changes are occurring. The technology is changing, the informatics, the patient will, the need, and putting the patient first is all changing now. And so there is a window of opportunity. And I think the people in this room are on their different lines, but I think we're all merging. My love of India and Indian philosophy, so I have to put in a Tagore quote, because you can be excited, you can have a vision, but that's not good enough. You can't just sort of sit and watch it and say, you know what, guys, I think we ought to do something. The people in this room ought to do something. We've all got different skills. Now, for those who know you, I can be a little bit cynical, I guess, on things, but the NHS long-term plan is, I think, one of the most exciting documents I've seen in 20 years. It is a really fantastic document. And those that haven't read it, please read it. It's a really good read and is readable, if you know what I mean, rather than sort of funny speak. The idea, it accepts that medicine is advancing and healthcare needs are changing, the patients, the professionals, and society is moving around. We have slightly different diseases. We've got slightly different expectations. And the long-term plan is really addressing that, and I would really recommend it. I was talking to Dido the other day, and she was saying that the whole mood is changing, and so we are going from a fragmented to an integrated health service. Yeah, national. I do talks around the world, and they're saying, you're so lucky, it's a national health service. And I kind of explained that we're not, really. We're a fragmented health service, and by the way, we're not a health service, we're a kind of disease service. We have very little in prevention, and also we have different timelines, but that's all changing. And the integrated care systems are bringing up is fantastic, but also the regulation, thou shalt do this, it's about improvement, it's not about obeying a rule. If there's a rule, great, but it's for a reason. Just a few sort of highlights from the NHS plan. They'll boost out-of-hospital care. That's in there, glaring at us. That is the direction of travel. Community multidisciplinary teams. We've got care homes. We've got people living longer with multiple long-term conditions. And I guess having just got my old man's rail card, I'm in the category now of the elderly or fast approaching it. But I don't think I'm elderly. But I am, but there are a lot of us out there, and a lot of us are relatively healthy, but we've got a few little bits and pieces of baggage, and we don't want to go to hospital all the time and queue up for ages. Our expectations of what we want from the NHS is changing. Connecting the home base and wearable equipment, that's in there. Wearable technology is in the NHS plan. It really needs to be read. It's fantastic. To prevent events, not cure events or treat events, prevent events, and to tackle a cause of morbidity and preventable tests. And learning disability, I'll talk about that in a while. I've got special interest in learning disability and how society hasn't really looked after the guys properly. Working with authorities, joining up the dots, health prevention, disease prevention. And it even goes into detail about glucose monitors, about how we will improve glucose monitoring. So it's all there in the NHS plan. Now, my son asked the other day what I was doing. I said, I'm giving a talk. He goes, what is it, Dad? I said, it's about diagnostics and how it's the future closer to the home. And he goes, it's a vision thing. And I said, yeah, Liam, it's a vision thing. And I thought, it's not really a vision thing, because every piece of technology that I'm going to talk about is here, yeah? And if it's here, why aren't we doing it? I've got a device. I meant to bring it today. It's a glucose meter. I got it from a friend of mine in India. It's a glucose meter with a 4G thing in it. I don't even know what it is, but it's a 4G thing. So this is in India. This is 5-6 years ago. You do your home monitoring of glucose, and it automatically, without you thinking about it, sends that glucose to a central database. In India, 5 years ago, it's happening. And then I thought, well, if it's not a vision thing for technology, what is it a vision thing for? And in reality, it's a vision thing for us, our thinking. The technology is there, the need is there. And I just feel, in that kind of convergence thing, if we are to take advantage of this window, we've got to kind of have a paradigm shift, not necessarily in technology, because it's there, not necessarily in informatics, it's there, it's in our thinking. And it got me thinking of why is it so difficult to change? If it's not the technology or the informatics and it's us, what's going on here? I read Dan Kahneman a long time ago, and I sadly kind of forgot about him until recently. He's a psychologist, got the Nobel Prize, Thinking Fast and Slow. And although life and biology isn't simple, in his mind, there are two ways of thinking. There's a system one thinking, let's do it now, let's do it quickly, let's do it now. Let's do the same thing bigger or the same thing cheaper. System one thinking. And it's full of bias and emotion, and it's cognitive bias. I'd like to think I'm good, but I've got loads of baggage, cognitive bias. We've all got that, and we need to work as a team. The problem with system one thinking, you make mistakes. And what he's calling for is we need to do some system two thinking. Just pause, reflect, think about what it is we're trying to do. It's a little bit slower, it's a little bit insightful, and takes a bit of effort. But the idea, if you want change, base it not on emotion, base it on data, base it on why you want to do it, and then get insight, and then change habits. So my criticism of us, me, I looked in the mirror, didn't like it. We need to do more system two thinking. Let's see what it is we're actually trying to do, because the tools are there. It's that we've got to change. And also, people talk about evidence. And I'm a great person of evidence. Everything's based on evidence. But what we usually do is base it on research evidence. Oh, the study of so-and-so showed, and that's great. But it's not just about the study of so-and-so. It's about the experts. Listen to the experts. If you think there's an idea we should go from A to B and all the experts say that's a really stupid idea, listen to the experts. Also, the experience. Listen to the people. Fantastic. I really thoroughly enjoyed your presentation this morning. And that's absolutely what this is about today. It's listening to what people really want. And it's not just the patients. It is the clinicians, the frontline clinicians, the people that haven't got time to write expert research papers, but they're the front line and they know what they're doing. So what's got me thinking is the evidence-informed practice, not evidence-based, evidence-informed. Let's get together and look at all of the stakeholders and say, guys, let's move from A to B. Okay, the world is changing, and I don't really want to talk about the world, but the primary care hubs are merging. So we've now got sort of bigger units, bigger systems out in primary care. We're going to have bigger treatment hubs. We're having an integrated system. We're no longer talking about the big hospital up the road and an overworked GP practice. What was a GP saying? Oh, for your lunch, you go and do all your home visits. I mean, you know, it's not sustainable. And people are talking about cost. I'm not going to talk too much about cost. There was one particular slide. But people are in silos. Oh, pathology costs X, let's reduce pathology. Radiology costs. It's not about cost. It's certainly not about silos. It's all about value to the system. And if it doesn't add value to the system, then don't do it. If it does add value for the system, you'll probably find it will save money in the system, not necessarily in the silo. So we have a whole new system. Now, the guys from the diagnostic companies will tell you, if this is a growth in pathology, This is the automated big central laboratory, but this is their growth in point of care. So what we're seeing in front of our very eyes is the diagnostic industry has seen a massive growth, and you probably can't read that, point of care in out of hospital. So the diagnostics industry are seeing what's unfolding already. And I'd like to sort of ask the question, are we in control of that? And I use control in inverted commas, but is that planned or is that random and Wild West? Change of emphasis, I mentioned before, NHS England and NHS Improvement are merging. So we are going from the fragmented to the integrated. Yes, we have to look at different systems. And Terry talked about pathology and networks, and there's going to be from radiology and probably everything, and that's good. But my particular arm of the NHS that I work for, NHSI, is getting it right first time. And it's clinically led improvement. We're talking about improvement. And what we found is if you improve it, you save money anyway. But let's focus on the improvement first. And as Terry said, in terms of simplifying this, I think there is a simple model. And I've been working on this with my colleagues in NHSI just to sort of make life simple. This is for diagnostics, for pathology specifically, where we have point of care testing, which I'll talk more about in a minute. We have laboratories either in small hospitals or whatever. You have the regional hubs for certain things, and you have the national specialist stuff. So we do have to ensure that there is a structure. We've all got to be within a structure, but the structure is an integrated structure. So that's a sort of vertical integration. What I want to talk about today is the horizontal integration. We've seen a couple of sort of this slide. We have the specialist hospital, but we're going down that continuum all the way to the home. And the NHS have claimed 80% of decisions are based on pathology. Now, no one can find any evidence that's true, but hey-ho, it sounds good. But if you're going to sort of have decisions based on a diagnostic test where health is delivered, and health is going to be delivered all the way along that continuum to the home, then clearly what you have to have is a horizontal integration to ensure that the diagnostics are all over the place. And so what you can see here is you have the point of care for tier one tests, that sort of point of care over in that sort of arm, and pop-up clinics, and I'll give you examples of that. And then you've got sort of tier two in the hospitals, then tier three in regional hubs, then tier four in national hubs. So there's a model that's emerging now that encompasses diagnostic in a controlled and integrated way, but acknowledging that it's got to be delivered in different areas along the continuum. And I'll just give you a few flash examples. I mean flash as in I'm going to do them quickly because the slides are available. But the tier one testing, we've got a point of care academy at Preston, and my colleagues have helped me do this, and it's patient-focused diagnostics. It's very simple. The premise is very easy. Take the laboratory to where it adds value. Don't put the laboratory in the middle of nowhere just because it's tuppence cheaper. Might reduce the value, but the point is, let's increase the value, and we'll find that the system cost will be reduced as well. And these are just examples. Some of them I've been working with, some of them, and I'll give you examples. But there are lots of reasons why we need to take the laboratory closer to the patient. And I'll give a few examples of what we've been up to. So, lab in a bag, outreach teams. What we have is a point of care device we stick in the bag, and it does all of those tests. And so what happens if there's an AKI, alert, acute kidney injury, or sepsis, identification of a patient in sepsis in the hospital, a team will go down, and rather than use the laboratory, they'll use a point of care device to make a decision there and then, a decision diagnostics. We're trying to sort of build it up with care homes as well. We're sort of trying to do something with the emergency department, and certainly the urgent care department, but the idea is to sort of have those diagnostics available. There's an urgent care centre in Oxford which have done this par excellence, where people go to the urgent care centre, they have point of care diagnostics, they significantly reduce the number of patients that go to the ED department, and again, all those downstream pressures can be stopped very early in the patient pathway. Decision diagnostics closer to the patient. Antimicrobial stewardship. This has been going on in Norway for about 20 years, 15 years, and we're struggling to do this. The NICE guideline is there. You do a CRP, then you make a decision. We have CRP point of care meters. I've had a CRP point of care meter for 6 or 7 years, but I'm finding it very difficult to put it out into the sort of system. We did some pilots with GPs, but that kind of didn't work, and we have to go backstream. But we're talking now about having GPs and pharmacists doing CRP. So imagine a journey. You're sort of feeling pretty grim, but instead of going through the whole system, you go to a pharmacist and say, right, you've got a bit of a chest infection. You do a CRP in a pharmacist. If it's not elevated, they'll say, antibiotics are not going to work, mate, but this is what I can do to help you because you're poorly. Or if your CRP is really high, look, you've got a really bad bacterial infection. We can sort that out. 5 minutes. Okay. D-dimers, lots of D-dimers. You can have a point of care D-dimer test. Neonatal jaundice, I've been doing this for years, or the midwives have been doing this years, at the community, reflectance, bilirubinometer, you don't have to take blood. Again, this is out there, the technology. Anticoagulation, we do a lot of anticoagulation, and we could do it better. Flu A, flu B, I have a point of care molecular biology for flu A, flu B. Preston, we had no secondary infections of flu, not last winter, but the winter before, when it was pretty bad. We rapidly identified patients at front of house with flu using the state-of-the-art molecular biology point of care. What we want to do next winter is put that out in the pharmacist or in the GP practice so the patient doesn't even have to go to hospital. Outpatients, there are devices where you have a one-stop shop in the renal patients. So rather than sort of having a one-stop clinic, take their blood and say, go and have a cup of tea and come back, we'll do that test, and we're about to go live with that around September in Preston. Again, decision diagnostics, make your decision. Neutropenic sepsis, again, white blood cell count. We can do that. The technology is there. We haven't started that yet in the community, but we're thinking of starting it in MAU just to look at early warning for sepsis. I'll skip over the next few slides. Apologies for that. Learning disability. The physical health of chaps with learning disability has been overlooked with diagnostic overshadowing. So what I did as a pilot when I was working advising NHS England, we did the Sunderland, it's the same story, I'll do it three times, Sunderland, Chorley, and Blackpool is the real one. And what we have is point of care for learning disabilities. We train the member of staff that the patient knows, and they will measure the biochemistry, the physiology, and that sort of thing. We're now looking at having a one-stop shop. I stole this from my colleague in India, and this is happening in India. So patients with long-term condition, this is diabetes, you go in the front door, 40 minutes later, you add your height, biochemistry, AF, hearing test, eye test. I think there's 40 in there for the diabetes and diet. 40 minutes in India, it's happening. We can't do this here. Lab in a box, I do a lot of community work. This is with the sort of health mailers around the country. We took the lab to the Windrush a couple of weeks ago. There was a Windrush festival in Preston, and that's my guys. We set up a health tent, and we were doing some health screening, so disease prevention. Homeless, we did it with Manchester University students. We went to an intermediate house in Manchester, and we did health screening with guys who are being sort of getting prepared to go back into society. That sounded patronising, I'm sorry. But it's a health check to help them get back into the straight and narrow. But that technology is not only out there, but this technology is here there. This is sort of Theresa May with a wearable glucose meter. If she wants to know what a glucose is, she just puts her iPhone like that and it does that for that. Technology is there. This is available as well, where you just put one little device into your iPhone, and that little box there with that strip will be able to determine what you're measuring. The analyzer is there. This technology is available. Right, three slides, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. Implication for quality. These things can go wrong. And there's a wild west at the moment. The laboratory has a huge infrastructure for quality. And we've got to make sure in that distributed model of healthcare, Whether it's done in the laboratory, I've got a huge hub at Preston with high quality, all of that stuff. But all the way from that to a patient's wearable, we, the professionals, have got to look after the quality. Workforce, in the Blackpool pilot, I don't put the technologists or the laboratory scientists out there. I train the learning disability nurses. So we'll have different people doing the testing, and the patient will do the testing. So the patient will be the diagnostician. We just embrace the patient. Cost, less than 1% of commissioner costs is on direct access pathology. Do we reduce that amount of money or spend perhaps the same or a little bit more and reduce the pathway cost, stopping the patient coming in twice? The glucose might be a penny cheaper, but if you stop the patient, if you go somewhere else, but if you stop the patient coming in second, it's worth more than the penny. Informatics, it's there. The 4G that I mentioned, that's here and there, but we're far better now. I'm about this autumn to start a project in Nepal where we're going out to the sort of the foothills of the Himalayas doing diabetes screening, and what we're going to do is dock those meters in the evening, or 4G, transmit it to my lab in Preston, to the middleware, so we can record it, and then back to the patient record. We can look at the results to make sure there's not a quality problem, and the results will go back into the patient's notes in Nepal. This is available now. Conclusion. Point-of-care test and Liver One diagnostics is expanding at pace. If we ignore it, it is at our peril. We're the professionals in the room. We've got to make sure that we embrace it, but ensure that it's done properly, both in terms of quality and in terms of the informatics. What's the point of having a fantastic test, but the GP doesn't know about it? We've got to change our paradigm of the way we deliver healthcare, and it's got to be an integrated, with an integration of all of the systems. So the five-year plan, the one before the long-term plan, it's quite interesting, we had a five-year plan and a long-term plan, but the five-year plan started this off, and it's designing the NHS around our patients. Let's design it around our patients, not design it around our laboratory or a building. Let's design it around us, because whilst we heard from this earlier, most of us, probably all of us in the room, are patients. So this is about us. It isn't about a laboratory or a building. This is about us. Let's use point of care to do that. And in terms of the structure, let's integrate it. I've got my old man rail card. But I can imagine I'm going to be a miserable old bugger when I'm 80. I don't want to go to hospital. I'll want a wearable. I want to do the diagnosis myself. And I think we're all a bit tech savvy on this. And so our demands as patients will change. And I think we, the health providers, must work within that framework to ensure that it's done appropriately and with high quality, and ensuring that we will design the NHS around the patient, not around ourselves. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.